good afternoon to you and a warm welcome to On The Radar Analysis right here on Eagle FM Namibia. I am your host Ndafa Happy Juju. Now it's Monday the 18th of August 2025, a brand new week in the land of the brave. Now for many, it's the first step into a long to-do list. For others, it's a chance to reset, regroup and realign their energy for the days ahead. Now whether you're powering through the morning rush in Windhoek, overseeing business in Rundu or easing into the day from Rudert with a strong cup of coffee, with a strong cup of coffee. Thank you for choosing us and spending the day and the afternoon with us. Now here on the Radar Analysis, we unpack the stories that sit at the heart of our national conversation. We break down policies, scrutinize implementation and spotlight the voices on the ground. From the halls of parliament to the informal settlements where the impact of those decisions is felt most deeply, we ask what promises are being made, which ones are being kept and who's being left out of the picture. What's on the national agenda today? Which developments should Namibians be watching as the week begins? And what do the latest headlines tell us about where we stand as a country navigating economic uncertainty, climate pressures, and social change? Now, don't forget you can follow the show live on Eagle FM app and the Eagle FM website. Engage with us on Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn, and WhatsApp. Whether you're listening from your office desk, school campus, taxi rank, or farm, we are honored to be part of your Monday. This is On The Radar Analysis, where Namibia's headlines meet Namibia's people. Let's jump straight into these discussions. Namibia has reaffirmed its commitment to achieving universal access to water and sanitation by leveraging domestic financing, concessional loans and new partnership with global investors. Now, speaking at the African Union Africa Water Investment Program AUAIP summit held ahead of the first ever G20 summit on African soil, Minister of Agriculture, Fisheries, Water and Land Reform Inge Zamwani emphasized that water security is a strategic national priority for Namibia and an essential pillar of sustainable development. Held under the theme Solidarity, Equality and Sustainability, the three-day summit convened African heads of state, ministers, development finance institutions and private investors to address Africa's $30 billion annual water investment gap. Now, the gathering aims to accelerate financing toward water infrastructure to build a water secure, climate resilient and economically empowered continent in line with the AU's Agenda 2063. Zamwani stressed that Namibia views investment in water not only as a public service obligation, but as an economic enabler linked to agriculture, climate resilience, energy, tourism and industrial growth. This is more than policy. It's about ensuring every Namibian has access to safe drinking water, farmers can irrigate their land, industries can thrive, and our country can stand strong against the challenges of climate change, she said. Now, Namibia has allocated $4.8 billion in its 2025-2026 national budget for water and sanitation, complemented by concessional loans secured from partners such as the Africa Development Bank and KfW. Now, these allocations are intended to fund rural water supply, impart bulb conveyance systems, support irrigation systems, develop new water infrastructures, and the rest. Namibia is also partnering with South Africa on a $2.5 billion feasibility study for the North Deauville Wilsdrift Dam on the Orange River, a project estimated at $231 million that aims to improve water security, support hydropower development, and protect the river ecosystems. Participating in the AUAIP summit, Namibia also gains access to multi-billion-dollar global investment pipelines, positioning the country in to co-finance large-scale infrastructure projects and accelerate its efforts to meet UN Sustainable Development Goal 6 on water and sanitation by 2030. Now, to get more insights and better understanding on this, let's engage up the ministry spokesperson, Simon Nyipandura, and right after the commercial break.
Yeah. Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of failure.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
So not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know, a person who does not have a capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than the Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for free, directly to your phone or computer. To become a subscriber, simply send a WhatsApp message with your number and email address to 081-200-4144. Be sure to save the phone number as a contact. The Villager, wherever you are.
And we are back. Like I said, you are tuned into On the Radar Analysis right here on Eagle FM. Now we're speaking to the spokesperson of the Ministry of Agriculture, Fisheries, Water and Land Reform. That is Mr. Simon Nyipandura. Good afternoon, sir, and welcome to On the Radar Analysis.
Very good morning to you too. Afternoon. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. Thank you.
Right.
Now, of course, I understand that Namibia has reaffirmed its commitment to achieving universal access to water and sanitation, hey, with so much investment being made or spoken about. And this was rightly spoken at the Africa Water Investment Program held in Cape Town. Kindly just break it down for us, perhaps so that the people can get it right from the right person on what this is all about.
All right. So the minister, Honorable Inge Lamani, attended the African Union, Africa Water Investment Program, Water Investment Summit,
mm-hmm.
which was taking place in Cape Town. At this engagement, she has reaffirmed its strong commitment towards water and sanitation investment to the world. And just to note in the beginning that some of these reaffirmments that she has made, they're already in motion. So in her speech, she mentioned that government or cabinet has allocated 5% of the national budget to the water, and sanitation sector. Also the cabinet, we have allocated to 2.8 billion over the current medium term expenditure framework for priority water and sanitation infrastructure.
Mm-hmm.
These funds will support rural water supply schemes and sanitation facilities targeting underserved communities to ensure that no Namibian is left behind. And in addition, we have also secured about 4 billion in concessional loans from the African Development Bank as well as the KfW Bank for the next medium term. Now, for some of this money that is already coming from the African Development Bank, if you are in the northern part of Namibia, precisely from Moshakati, on your way to Oshikuku until Ogongo, you will see that there are heavy earth-moving machineries that are busy digging trenches. That is on to improve some of the infrastructure or to install pipelines that are running from Ogongo to Oshakati. That's all for the water supply programs that we have. So in also to these resources are earmarked for large-scale projects that will improve bulk water conveyances, rehabilitation of aging infrastructures, as I've mentioned, such as those the project between Oshakati and Ogongo. Also, it's also in Ohangwena, and it's also assisting the ministry to dig into the Ohangwena aquifer too. So those are part of the programs earmarked for this new money that we're getting. So we know that the public financing alone is not enough.
Yeah.
That's now the minister talking. Namibia is therefore advancing public-private partnership as a core part of our water security strategy. Another flagship initiative project that is planned is the coastal desalination plant to be developed with private investors in a private, in a public-private partnership agreement. This facility will supply water to the mining sector, which is crucially to our, which is crucial to our economy, and to the coastal towns, thereby relieving pressure on the limited local groundwater sources, this project reflects our commitment to the diversification of water sources, enhance climate resilience, and promote economical growth. So our investment drive is not only limited to infrastructure. We are equally committed to building institutional and technical capacity needed to operate and maintain this infrastructure. So once we build this infrastructure, it's just not for them to stand. So there is a need for them to be maintained, so that we can to also do more research on how to expand them, basically. So we recognize that security, water security, is inseparable from food security also. Energy security, public health, tourism, and economic competitiveness. For this reason, Namibia approach water investment not only as an isolated sector issue, but as a driver of national development, of regional integration. And that is what the previous minister has been preaching, that without water, you've got nothing. And as you can see, it is just a continuation from what he had left off. And that's where the minister, together with the ministry's management, is continuing on or building onto the Namibian dream. Now, we also have made investments into the studies of building a dam at the Falls Drift dam in the southern, in the Orange River. But that's going to be a joint activity with Namibia as well as South Africa. So that one is just to make sure that the activities down the river are well catered for with proper water, and also that there's sufficient water for these are projects like the irrigation schemes that are down the Orange River. There's also the mining activities that are there. So in a nutshell, that those are some of the commitments that the minister have actually committed to. And we'll be keeping you posted, the nation, as the development of the different programs that the ministry will be engaging in, together with its developmental partners such as NamWater. So we will keep you posted. Should the nation have more queries, our office, which is the Public Relations Office, is open for anything, and we shall communicate and we shall revert to you. So thank you very much.
Mr. Simon, you rightly say that Namibia is also partnering with South Africa on a 2.5 million feasibility study for the Noordduvel Foyle Street Dam on the Orange River. Now, from what I've read, the project is estimated at $231 million that aims to improve water security, support hydropower development, and protect river ecosystems. Who exactly, maybe not exactly who, but who perhaps will be involved in this study, and when is it expected to commence? You also did rightly speak in the beginning that some of these projects are already up on ground and running. Is this one of the projects that already have been started?
Yes, the feasibility has been started, but I, at the moment, cannot give much information. I shall revert back to you and the community at large with the correct information, where we'll brief the nation on what exactly is going to be happening or what has taken place already.
Okay. Other than that, how is the ministry ensuring that water infrastructure development reaches vulnerable and historically underserved communities?
Dafa, if you've noticed and you've been reading or following our social media network platforms, you've realized that in the past, especially in the past 5 years, we've drilled so many boreholes. We have laid a lot of pipelines. Some of them we have rehabilitated. Some of them we are busy in the process. One of them is Oshakati Shakati Omsia pipeline, which is also under rehabilitation, where the pressure is seem to be little. So those are some of the government commitments, and those are some of the government's programs that we've been engaged in. There are many of them. You've read that there are certain traditional wells that have been converted into modern wells, where we've hear people, they have been collapsing, but they've been properly casted now and producing water sources. You've heard that the ministry has put up mini desalination plants at areas where we've drilled to boreholes, or boreholes have been drilled, but water quality was not so good. So those are the initiatives that the government has been put into place. And you also know that in certain communities, not just in rural communities, but also in Windhoek, we've got programs like the stopping the defecation, in especially the informal settlement. So those are forms, so those are programs that we're making sure that our commitment is brought to life, and we are not just preaching, but we're also bringing the action part.
Mm-hmm. I hear you. Mr. Simon Nipandura, just one question, not specifically related to this, but I just kind of want to find out in terms of if I personally want to drill a borehole in my village at on my farm or wherever, is there specific guidelines that I need to reach out to the ministry to do that, or I can just go ahead and do it? I ask this because I do have a friend of mine who was very much keen and interested in that, and she actually did that. Is that something that is right to do just on my own without perhaps engaging the ministry, or are there particular guidelines that I need to follow?
Yes, we have the new Water Management Act that we've been running a campaign on for the past, I think starting April.
Okay.
So in that act, it clearly establishes on what guidelines to follow. But also on our social media pages, should you go on, you'll be able to see that before drilling a borehole, do consult our Water Resource Management Directorate, where you will get guidelines on how to drill, which contractors that you need to consult, and all the things surrounding the drilling. It's not just you wake up and you start drilling, but because these are natural and national resources that you're tapping into, they need to be preserved, and so we need to follow the guidelines that have been put in place.
Okay. Thank you so much, Mr. Simon Nipandura, for making time for us right here on the Radar Analysis.
No, it's a pleasure, and thank you very much for the time.
Okay.
Bye.
And there we had it from Simon Nipandura, just shedding light on the commitments that the Ministry of Agriculture, Water and Land Reform has committed itself to in terms of trying to reach the goal of ensuring that universal access to water and sustainability is achieved. Now, with that being said, let's pause right here and take a trip to the marketplace. This is On The Radar Analysis. We also invite you to partake in the news analysis that is on 083-288-401. You can come through and air opinions and contributions right here on The Radar Analysis.
No matter where you are, if you have a mobile device, you can tune into Namibia's number one talk radio station by downloading the Eagle FM app on the Google Play Store or on the Apple App Store. Download the Eagle FM app to tune into live Eagle FM programming or to listen to podcasts or previous broadcasts. Eagle FM, Namibia's number one talk radio station.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Eagle FM, the eye.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, and I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Simon, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel
anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the I.
Great news. Impact just got even better. We have added brand new features to make your experience smoother, faster, and more powerful than ever before. Ready to unlock the full potential of IMBA? Get all exclusive features for just 36 Namibian dollars a month, or save even more with our special subscription plans. 5% discount for 3 months subscription, 10% discount for 6 months subscription, and 25% discount for 12 months subscription. Choose the plan that works best for you and start enjoying everything IMBA has to offer at an unbeatable price. IMBA, where the world congregates. Download it and subscribe today.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura menace.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the I.
Welcome back, and now moving on to other news to analyze. Today, the Ministry of Health and Social Services launched the Namibia Essential Clinical Supplies List of 2025. Speaking at the launch of the first edition of the Namibia Essential Clinical Supplies List, Executive Director of the Ministry of Health and Social Services, Penda Ithindi, said that the initiative marks a major milestone in strengthening the country's health system, ensuring that all Namibians receive safe, high-quality care. He explained that the list is more than a publication, and it's a strategic evidence-based reference tool that will guide how health facilities across the country are equipped. He explained that the list is more than a publication. It's a strategic evidence-based reference tool that will guide how health facilities across the country are equipped and resourced. Now, developed through a broad consultative process that began in 2023, the list involved regional representatives from all 14 regions, supply chain and procurement specialists, clinicals, nurses, biomedical engineers, and policymakers. According to Ithindi, this collaborative approach ensures that the list reflects the real needs of the health system and prioritizes items that are essential, cost-effective, and aligned with national treatment standards. He noted that the list covers a wide range of non-pharmaceutical clinical supplies, including disposable items such as needles and syringes, wound care materials, diagnostic consumables, surgical procedure kits, and infection prevention supplies items that are critical for delivering routine and emergency services. Clearly defining these items will help standardize clinical practices across all facilities, enable national procurement decisions, and improve supply chain efficiency by enhancing forecasting, budgeting, and reducing stockouts and wastage. Now, the executive director emphasized that the list supports the national medicines policy and universal health coverage policy and the sustainable development goals, particularly SDG 3, on ensuring health and well-being for all. He added that the document will be updated regularly to keep pace with evolving needs and technological advances, and called on procurement officers, supply chain managers, and clinicians to fully integrate it into their daily work. Ithindi also paid tribute to the technical working group, regional health directorate, and development partners such as USAID Global Health Supply Chain Program and the World Health Organization for their support, adding that the success of this clinical risk depends on sustained collaboration and commitment across all levels of the health sector. Now, to understand it further, let's pause right here and make room for commercial break, and we'll be back to engage somebody on it so you can get a better, thorough understanding of it.
Great news! Imba just got even better. We have added brand new features to make your experience smoother, faster, and more powerful than ever before. Ready to unlock the full potential of Imba? Get all exclusive features for just 36 Namibian dollars a month, or save even more with our special subscription plans. 5% discount for 3 months subscription, 10% discount for 6 months subscription, and 25% discount for 12 months subscription. Choose the plan that works best for you and start enjoying everything Imba has to offer at an unbeatable price. Imba, where the world congregates. Download it and subscribe today.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, and I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the I.
Welcome back. Now let's get further into understanding what this clinical essential supply list is all about. Now, the clinical supply list is a comprehensive tool designed to improve the management of the clinical supplies within Namibian public health sector. It organizes essential clinical items into 13 product groups, example blades and lancets, bandages and dressings, and furthermore, making it easy to find what the doctor, the nurse or the clinical practitioner actually needs. Now, under each product program, the clinical supplies are identified by product name, which includes syrup stock code of the Directorate of Pharmaceutical Services, descriptions, pack sizes, usages, and images. The document includes annexures with instructions on how to use the clinical supply list and outlines the process for requesting changes to the supply, to the essential clinical supply list. All requests for changes are managed by the essential clinical supply list committees. Now, the purpose of it is to improve clinical supply management across all health facilities, as well as to provide a standardized reference for essential clinical supply items. In other words, every item has a number that obviously that you can be able to see this is particularly that which is out of stock. Now, it provides a standardized reference for essential clinical supply items, and it supports efficient procurement and distribution of the essential clinical supplies. On how the list is structured, it is structured in terms of product groups, with items being sorted out alphabetically by groups, example blades and lancets, item details which with each entry including a product name, the generic name of the clinical supply, the stock code, which is a unique identifier for the ordering, description, a brief explanation of the item specification, and a pack size, the quantity per package with its usage, typically application and use cases, and images for visual references. For instance, if perhaps the doctor or the nurse or the clinical supplier knows that particular item by perhaps only by seeing it, but they don't really know it in terms of the name. So it makes it quite easier in that regard. Now, of course, we're also going to engage the ministry spokesperson, Mr. Walter Skamaya, on this. and are joining us to help us understand better on the Namibia Essential Clinical Supply List is the Ministry Spokesperson, Mr. Walter Skamaya. Good afternoon, sir, and welcome to On the Radar Analysis.
Good afternoon to you, Ken. Good afternoon.
Now, this is quite new to Namibia, of course, the launch of Namibia's Essential Clinical Supply List 2025. First and foremost, I want to understand what prompted this launch and why it's very essential for a nurse, a doctor, a clinical practitioner out there.
Yes, what has prompted this initiative by the Minister of Health and Social Services is the issue of ongoing problems of out-of-stocks and other things. So the ministry have decided to come up with a strategy that will ensure that the clinical supplies in our facilities, they don't get out, we don't run out of those clinical supplies, so that we equip our facilities with all clinical supplies as needed.
Interesting. Now, I've just gone through the guide on in how it actually works, in whereby if, for instance, perhaps a nurse or a doctor is not able to identify the name of a particular item that they need, but they know it visually. And it also comes with pictures. Why is this also very important that you that the ministry had to just put in the pictures itself?
Yes, very well. That's a very good question. The issue is if you cannot identify the product or the clinical supply by the name, at least you should be able to see it. Even with our patients, they should be able to say, last time I was here, this type of medicine helped me very well. So it's just a true way of being able to identify what you need. You know, sometimes they say seeing is believing. There are those people who can just, when you see it, just straight away you are able to pick it. This is what I want, or this is what I'm looking for. Yes.
Okay. Is this going to be made available to the public, or is it only restricted to the healthcare professionals themselves? I mean, with if we're talking about patients also taking ownership of their health, perhaps they might also need to understand what is going on, what is being put on me in that kind of regard. So is this going to be made, is the knowledge going to be extended to the public people as themselves?
Not really, but it's just for staff members to be able to know, as well as the ministry, to get informed. This is a strategy that informs our way of procuring our pharmaceuticals, our way of stocking up our facilities, the way of monitoring up our levels, not necessarily for our outpatients. This one, them, the beneficiaries, will just be able to receive a proper service. This is a way to ensure that we are informed of things that are running out, of things that we still have, and then we'll be able also to tell when should we procure, when should we say we have more than enough, and so forth.
And this knowledge, to which particular healthcare providers is it targeting?
It's more for our procurement process, for our stores, for our medical stores, you know. When we have the medicines, that's the bottom line. That's the key point. It's just for us to be able to control our stock levels in terms of monitoring our stock levels, evaluating our stock levels, see to it that how much stock do we need, and so forth. It's just a way to ensure that we don't understock, we don't overstock, but we stock accordingly, according to our needs.
Quite interesting, hey. In that regard also, Mr. Kamaya, in terms of, I see that it's mostly the equipment that is being used that is mostly displayed in this particular document. And what about in terms, and you speak about medication as well, what about in terms of medicine? Is there perhaps a planned outline also for that, or this for now is just on the equipment itself?
Yes, we are ensuring from both angles. Though you see the equipments are also vital, as well as medicine. Even those equipments, they are regarded as medicine. So the launch of the strategy is so holistic that it encompasses everything that we need in our facilities. Yes.
Okay. So in terms of that, you still, you speak about it being able to help, procurement stores, to be able to see what is in stock. And I guess also then, stock up their shops or their stores. But how exactly does the ministry intend on ensuring that there is no out of stock, equipment or medication? I mean, when we talk about out of stock, equipment, it can be so essential that, let's say, for instance, an emergency care practitioner on the road and doesn't have perhaps a syringe or even a catheter, a cannula. Just how important is that in terms of what has been happening recently here and there? We would hear that the ministry is out of stock on such and such.
Yes, the issue here, I just want to make it clear from the onset of things.
Yeah.
Whatever the ministry does, let us not forget that there could be some rooms for negligence.
Mm.
If you are in an emergency system or emergency situation, or the ambulance is traveling there or somewhere, and then for some reason somebody forgets to pick a syringe, that one, it cannot be blamed on the ministry.
Yeah,
it's just somebody, and then we can also say that it's human nature to forget something.
True.
That one, we can just say it's negligence.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes when the person got the message, the person tried to panic, or the person tried to respond to the emergency in a rush, and then the person happens to forget. But that one, it cannot be correct to say the responsibility of the ministry.
Mm-hmm.
That one is something else.
Okay. Overall, what message would you like to pass on in terms of the launch, the now launch of the Namibia Essential Clinical Supply List 2025, with it being also leaving allowance and room for more products or more items to be added should the need arise, of course. Overall, what do you say about this launch, Mr. Kamaya?
Yes, overall, I want to say the purpose of today's launch is to standardize. Is the standardization, which is ensuring all facilities has access to the same approved high-quality supplies.
Mm-hmm.
Rational selection, which is guiding the procurement decision to focus on items that are essential and cost-effective and well-aligned with the national treatment guidelines. And then this supply chain efficiency, this is enabling better forecasting and budgeting, as well as the distribution, thereby reducing stock outs and wastage.
Mm.
So that's the purpose of the launch all in all.
Mm.
And then we hope this is a step in a good direction.
Mr. Kamaya, before I actually do let you go, you spoke about an important aspect, an important element that I've overlooked today, about wastage. And I think this comes, this message probably goes both to the public people themselves who receive the service from the Ministry of Health, and also to those that work in the Ministry of Health. They are those who really waste government resources. How does the ministry intend to work on that aspect? For instance, you find a nurse who's using more syringes on one particular patient, and then I think this also contributes to stock being out of stock. Am I making sense? So overall, in terms of wastage, how does the ministry intend to address that aspect? Because sometimes out of stock items come as a result of wastage from the employees or the workers themselves.
Yes, the wastage, we cannot just blame it on employees only. The wastage that we want to ensure, we are just now rolling out the HPV vaccine campaign.
Mm-hmm.
The wastage that I'm talking about, sometimes you get a vial, you get a bottle, and then the cap of the bottle is out. That one is being counted as a wastage.
Mm-hmm.
Because if the way it was packaged, now it's no longer in the same process, same situation, same state of the package.
Mm-hmm.
We count that as a wastage. Not necessarily that these have been done by staffs on, yes, those ones, we cannot rule them out. But when we refer to the wastage, is the way these medicines are being transported, the way are being stored, the way are being handled, and so forth. Sometimes if you discover that they can be broke, those that comes in bottles, we want to prevent the breaking of those bottles, the caps getting out of the bottles. Once it's not in the manufacturing state, we regard it as a wastage.
Mm. Okay.
Yes.
But I'm referring to workers themselves being nurses, because this is something that I have observed myself.
That one, should it come to our attention, definitely somebody has to account for it.
Mm.
Yes, that one, if it's ticked and then it's clear, there's evidence, somebody has to account for it. Because at the end of the day, you should be able to account for what has been distributed to your pharmacy, to your facility, in most cases.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay, that is very clear. Thank you so much, Mr. Walter Skamaya, for making time to educate us on this.
Thank you. It was a pleasure having you.
Okay. And there you had it from the spokesperson of the Ministry of Health and Social Services, Walter Skamaya, also just giving us an insight on this Namibia Essential Clinical Supplies list. Now, let me read just shortly about forward by the Executive Director, Penda Ithindi, on this Essential Clinical Supply List. Now, he says the Namibia Essential Clinical Supply List serves as a fundamental reference tool for the healthcare providers, policymakers, and procurement professionals in Namibia. Now, the document is, of course, for all of them, but it's mostly addressing, from what I'm now deducing, addressing procurement professionals in Namibia. This is to ensure that the clinical supplies chain remains efficient and responsive to the needs of the population. It says this document is developed in line with the Ministry of Health and Social Services strategic objectives to enhance the availability and rational use of essential health commodities in public health facilities. Now, the Directorate Pharmaceutical Services currently manages approximately 1,400 active product lines, of which 600 are classified as clinical supplies. However, with the existing list developed nearly 30 years ago, an urgent need arose to review and update it to align with evolving healthcare demands. Now, the processes involved removing obsolete items, introducing new essential products, and establishing a sustainable procurement framework through the pre-qualification of manufacturers. Imagine maybe let's say, for instance, just an example, an old syringe which was designed in a certain way, but is now outdated, is not really being used anymore. And perhaps because of perhaps in terms of procurement services, it's still being bought and procured, but not really being facilitated, or with the healthcare professionals also being advanced in terms of health practices, and sometimes some items actually outdated and not being used anymore, and that particular item is still being purchased, that would be a wastage. Hence why I guess there was also a need, you know, so introducing new essential products that are then in demand that need to be used. Now, he says to achieve this, the ministry undertook a consultative process that ensured a broad participation from key stakeholders. Representation from 14 regions was structured through zone groupings with inputs from healthcare professionals, themselves, including regional pharmacists, nurses, medical doctors, procurement specialists, clinical engineers, and other relevant cadres. Now, over a 2-month period, healthcare facilities assessed the list, identified items for retention, items for replacement or introduction based on current clinical needs. Now, as consultative workshop further facilitated in-depth discussions, well, multidisciplinary teams refined the list to ensure its relevance and practicity. Now, this resulted in the comprehensive review of the clinical supplies catalog and ultimately the Namibia Essential Clinical Supplies List, and the list was subsequently presented to the Ministerial Management Committee for endorsement. And this is quite interesting, hey, very, very interesting for myself, as I came to know. And also the book itself, perhaps you can get your copy at the ministry itself, at their service, at their offices, perhaps at the public relations office, so that you can further equip yourself if you are in the health facility Christianity and you would like to understand more, and perhaps also makes it very easier for you. Perhaps if you have to request the pharmaceutical store, if they have a particular item of particular catheter with a particular size for a particular child that you need, then you're well equipped in this regard. And that they always say that knowledge is power, and we have to continuously educate ourselves in terms of what is relevant and what is outdated. Now, with that being said, let's pause right here and take a trip to the marketplace. This is On the Radar Analysis. If you would like to partake in the conversation, 083-288-401 is the number in studio.
No matter where you are, if you have a mobile device, you can tune into Namibia's number one talk radio station by downloading the Eagle FM app on the Google Play Store or on the Apple App Store. Download the Eagle FM app to tune into live Eagle FM programming or to listen to podcasts or previous broadcasts. Eagle FM, Namibia's number one talk radio station.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Eagle FM, the R.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Eagle FM, the R.
Great news! Impact just got even better. We have added brand new features to make your experience smoother, faster, and more powerful than ever before. Ready to unlock the full potential of Imba? Get all exclusive features for just 36 Namibian dollars a month, or save even more with our special subscription plans. 5% discount for 3 months subscription, 10% discount for 6 months subscription, and 25% discount for 12 months subscription. Choose the plan that works best for you and start enjoying everything Imba has to offer at an unbeatable price. Imba, where the world congregates. Download it and subscribe today.
Welcome back, and now we take you to what's making headlines in terms of economic indicators and trading economics. Thereafter, you can expect some international news right here on the Radar Analysis. Now let's get right into it. In terms of the Namibian dollar compared to other currencies today, $1 will get you 17 Namibian dollars and 62 cents, while $1 Australian dollar will get you 11 Namibian dollars and 47 cents. £1 sterling, on the other hand, will get you 23 Namibian dollars and 86 cents. Now moving on to trading economics. WTI crude oil futures rose about above $63 per barrel on Monday as market focused on the meeting in Washington between US President Donald Trump and Ukraine President Volodymyr Zelensky, aimed at advancing a peace deal with Russia. Now, the talks will also include European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen, French President Emmanuel Macron, and NATO Secretary General Mark Rutte. Trump said he would press Zelensky to agree to a quick settlement following his Friday discussions with Russian President Vladimir Putin, which centered on Moscow's demand for Ukraine to curtail territories. He also signaled little agency in imposing penalties on Russia and countries purchasing its oil, softening his earlier stance during their summit in Alaska. Oil prices have fallen more than 10% so far this month, pressured as well by concerns over the economic fallout from Trump's tariffs and rising OPEC plus supply. The gross domestic product of Mongolia expanded by 5.6% in the second quarter of 2025, accelerating from a 2.4% growth in the previous three-month period. Now, this marked the strongest economic growth since the second quarter of last year, mainly driven by strong performance in the agriculture sector at 3.6% versus 1% in the first quarter. Additionally, production rose for industry and construction sectors at 1% versus 0.4%, primarily in construction. On the other hand, output in services moderated as wholesale and retail and transportation continued to decline, while other services slowed. On a seasonally adjusted quarterly basis, the country's economy grew by 1.6% in the second quarter, following a 0.4% expansion in the preceding period. Spain's trade deficit surged to 3.59 billion euros in June 2025, that is from 0.71 billion euros in the same month of the previous year. Now, imports jumped by 10.9% year on year to 37.4 billion euros, largely due to higher purchases of capital goods, chemical products, of which medicines accounted for plus 55.4%, raw materials, at plus 20.2%, automotive products, manufactured consumer goods and durable consumer goods at plus 10.6%. Now, among key partners, imports rose from the EU at plus 2.5%, the US at plus 21.5%, and China at plus 27.4%. Meanwhile, exports rose by 2.4% to 33.8 billion euros. Now, in terms of the top commodity in the agriculture sector today, the top commodity gainers are rubber at 1.84%, with the biggest losers being canola at minus 1.09%. Corn comes in at second place at minus 1.04% and sugar at 0.86%. Now, in energy commodities, the top commodity losers are natural gas at minus 3.53%, gasoline at minus 0.52%, and blend crude oil at minus 0.29%. Producer prices in Czech Republic decreased by 1.2% year-on-year in July 2025, more than market forecast and June's 0.7% fall. Now, this marked the sixth consecutive month of declining producer prices, mainly due to lower costs for mining and quarrying at minus 4.2% versus minus 3.9% in June, and electricity, gas, steam and air conditioning supply at minus 4.0% versus minus 3.7%. Additionally, prices for manufacturing dropped by 0.4% from 0.3% increase in the prior month. Meanwhile, costs for water supply, sewerage, waste management and remediation services remained steady at 4.1%. Now, on a monthly basis, producer prices rose by 0.1% in July, rebounding from a 0.2% drop in the previous month. And now that's what we had for you today in terms of economic indicators and trading economics. Let's pause right here and take a trip to the marketplace. And as you know, when we do return, we shall be bringing you what's making headlines in terms of news beyond the borders of Namibia. Stay tuned.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than the Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published every Monday, Wednesday and Friday for free, directly to your phone or computer. To become a subscriber, simply send a WhatsApp message with your number and email address to 081-200-4144. Be sure to save the phone number as a contact. The Villager, wherever you are.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal. Scandal. Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in parliament, let me not take up my Catatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Catatura. Uh-huh. And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6%. Is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before. Mm. It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past. Mm. And it's not something Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back. You are tuned into On The Radar News Analysis right here on Eagle FM. Now, at this point, we take you to news beyond the borders. Of course, we start off regionally and then we move over to continental news. Thereafter, you can expect some international news. Now, we're starting off in South Africa, where Absa Bank has released its interim financial results.
Mfundo. So Absa came out with their half-year results today for the 6 months ended June 2025. The bank reported total income of 56.5 billion rand. That's up 5.2% on the year prior, while headline earnings per share came in at 1,354.1 cents. That's up 14% on the year before. The company's return on equity also ticked up to 14.8% from 14% on last year, while shareholders are set to get a gross interim dividend of 7.85 rand a share. Well, to take us behind the numbers, I'm joined by newly appointed CEO, Kenny Fihla. He is the CEO at Absa Bank. Thank you so much, Kenny, for joining us. So your headline numbers are looking quite decent, and I see that your gross loans and advances were up 8% at 1.5 billion rand, while deposits were up 13% at 1.4 billion rand. Just give us a sense of what drove the latest numbers from your multi-country operations.
I think there are a number of factors. The first is that the underlying health of our client franchise is very solid. I mean, when we look at the performance of our CIB business, it did exceptionally well, especially the global market business. Towards the sort of later half of the first half of this year, we saw a significant growth as well in our CIB business of the asset book, i.e. loans to customer. So that business seems to be sustaining the momentum, and we're very pleased with that. We saw an improvement in the sort of quality of our book in our PBB business, i.e. our retail business. That business had a terrible period last year, and certainly the focus that was put in ensuring that we originate good quality business, we improve on the management of risk, came true, and we saw impairment in that business coming down and therefore providing a relief, which has resulted in the significant improvement in the performance of PBB South Africa. The RBB in Africa region continues to perform well. The strength of the diversified franchise, i.e. our business in Ghana, in Kenya, in Uganda, as well as in Tanzania, continue to do well. There are still some challenges in parts of the footprints, like in Mozambique. But I think overall, we are benefiting from a well-diversified business where people are focusing on the right kind of things. And I think this momentum, if sustained, will result in a much more better 2025, and we've provided a guidance to that regard.
Yeah. So, Kenny, when it comes to your loan advances, just in terms of the commercial side, where are you seeing the bulk of that going? Is renewable energy still a big thing? Where are you seeing the investments?
Renewable energy, absolutely. The momentum is still there, and we continue to do well in that regard. We are also seeing some positive green shoots emerging in other sectors of the economy, i.e. some early start, I mean, that is starting to build momentum in the retail sector. And we've been party to supporting some of the clients that had to restructure their debt and ensure that they are adequately supported. We continue to focus on the broader energy sector beyond renewable, and we think there are some opportunities there for us to support clients and ensure that the infrastructure that is required to give people access to energy is built, constructed, and ultimately can contribute to unlocking the potential of our country's economies. The consumer is starting to feel a little bit better, even though the GDP in South Africa is not growing fast enough. But our early delinquencies are starting to subside, which suggests that consumers have disappeared and therefore are able to start off spending and consequently drive the slight improvement in the demand for credit. We will, however, continue to look out for risk, because we're not out of the woods yet. But at the end of the day, we have to support the growth of the economies and make sure that we selectively back clients where we think it is appropriate to do so.
Yeah. So, Kenny, you're newly in the seat, as I mentioned at the top of my introduction.
Moving on to Zambia, President Hakainde Hichilema has urged farmers to boost cattle production.
The Luanza traditional ceremony of the Lundwe people of Bwengwa in Monze district. A traditional event that is now more than just a ceremony, but a platform exhibiting the Hamsonde chiefdom's determination to contribute to the attainment of Zambia's target of at least $1 billion of beef exports. This is why the organizing committee has introduced the cattle auction component.
Bid number one, 30,000 quota.
President Hakainde Hichilema, who has been represented at this year's event by Infrastructure, Housing and Urban Development Minister Charles Milupi, has urged the organizing committee to make the cattle auction component bigger next year.
It is common knowledge that Bwengwa and Namwawa constituencies are cattle belt of Zambia. With our government setting an annual target for the country to earn at least $1 billion in beef exports to outside countries, Bwengwa will play a pivotal role in the achievement of this target and earn the country the much-needed foreign exchange.
President Hichilema says the government is committed to support the growth of the cattle industry through, among other interventions, the construction and rehabilitation of dams and deep tanks.
In the agriculture and livestock sector, Nagaulwe Dam has been renovated, while in Hakunkula, a new dam has been constructed to provide water for irrigation, people and livestock. Deep tanks in Agatuba and Narutanda have been renovated, while in Nakaubwe, a new deep tank has been constructed.
And Chief Hamsonde, through his representative Miuna Mwanakampwe, says the chiefdom is ready to support the government's drive to grow the beef industry.
We are also willing to answer to your government's call to be part and parcel of the beef compartments. And as we want to be part and parcel of the beef compartments, we are crying for water as Hamsonde chiefdoms. We want, as we rear cattle here, guests of honor. And as you are aware, that one of the major challenges that we face every day is water harvest points, which we are calling upon your government, which is listening government, to make sure that we have enough. And we know that already feasibility activities are underway. We are very grateful, but we want to see this actualized as soon as possible because we want to contribute positively to the gross domestic product of this country by way of providing enough animals to the beef compartment corridor.
Southern Province Minister Credo Nanjua says the provincial administration is also ready to work with the Hamsonde Royal Establishment to grow the cattle and beef industry.
We want to work with you to make sure that we qualify our small-scale farmers to qualify into the beef export market. How do we do that? We need to work together to fight in reducing the disease burden in our province. Abiding by what government has declared as red spot zones, when government bans certain areas in terms of cattle movement, that has to be adhered to.
Meanwhile, House of Chiefs Chairperson Chief Jongo, through his representative Chief Mkambo, has commended the government for its continued support to traditional ceremonies and commitment to promoting national unity.
It is regrettable that our national unity and identity, which Zambians are known for, is threatened with disintegration due to influence of foreign cultures and a political inclination, among others. The social media has played a big role in spreading this bad scourge by promoting hate speech, tribal remarks, falsehoods, and misinformation.
This year's Luanza traditional ceremony has been attended by Ingosi Malope, paramount chief of the Vangwakese people of Botswana, alongside several other chiefs from across Zambia. Justin Akakulubelwa, ZNBC News, Monze District.
Moving on to Kenya, the Confederation of African Football slapped Kenya with a hefty $50,000 fine for repeated security lapses during CHAN 2024. Now, as a result, Kenya's final Group A clash against Zambia will be played at only 60% stadium capacity. The government now says it will bolster security to prevent further cloud trouble and disciplinary action.
Meanwhile, the Kenyan government has promised to deploy more resources to secure the home team's matches against crowd trouble after heavy disciplinary sanctions from the Confederation of African Football. CAF has fined the CHAN 2024 co-hosts for the second week running since the tournament began, and this time the sanction is $50,000. In further punishment, Kenya will play its final Group A match against Zambia on Sunday with a reduced ground capacity of 60%. CGTN's Sadiq Shaban reports.
The 19-team African Nation Championship in Uganda, Tanzania and Kenya has largely been smooth so far, with the teams seeking crucial points to progress beyond the group stage. However, in Kenya, there's a developing problem with indiscipline from football fans and crowd control that is giving officials sleepless nights.
CAF regulations are very clear. If you don't have a ticket, even the local regulations are very clear. If you don't have a ticket, don't go near the stadium. Our fans have violated this. They have gone a long way to defy the police on duty and force their way into the stadium.
The situation has compelled the Confederation of African Football to impose a heavy fine of $50,000 on the Kenya Football Federation and order their home match stadium capacity to be capped at 60%.
CAF is extremely unhappy with these security breaches. CAF has strongly condemned these security breaches. They are unacceptable. They cannot be happening. And we are currently in discussions, serious discussions with the government of Kenya, with the local organizing committee, with the Federation, Football Federation in Kenya, to ensure that we cannot have this situation.
Tickets for Kenyan matches have been hard to purchase for most fans, and officials have admitted for the first time that a ticketing scandal has rocked the tournament in Kenya.
In the last couple of games, we witnessed a lot of forgeries. We witnessed a lot of fake tickets being put into the market. So please only buy tickets from the official platforms that we have provided.
And as it deals with the crowd control situation, CAF has also acknowledged that football is a powerful tool for social cohesion, something that most Kenyans have been yearning for a long time.
The way the Kenyan people have embraced this chant brings this country back to the spotlight. Of course, we must ensure every person who goes to the stadium, we must do our best, working with the police, working with the security stakeholders, working with the local organizing committee and the federation, that the people who go to the stadium, the families who go there, enjoy a very safe environment. This is a priority for us. But you've got to look at it from the fact that the way the Kenyans have embraced this competition has, I think, exceeded everyone's expectations.
The Kenya football team has also exceeded the public's expectations with impressive back-to-back victories at home, notably against two-time champions DR Congo and Morocco in the group stage. But officials are worried about the runaway problem of rowdy fans in the competition.
The future of Kenyan football now depends on our collective responsibility and cooperation. Continued security breaches risk attracting severe sanctions from the relevant authorities, sanctions that will ultimately deny Kenyan fans the chance to enjoy such events in the future.
The African Football Body has warned Kenya that unless normalcy is restored in Nairobi amongst its fans, the Kenya national football team risk playing their future matches in the neighboring countries.
The National Police Service is preparing enough officers to enforce the directives that were given by CAF, and we will make sure that we provide proper security to ensure that the unticketed fans do not access Kasarani, so that we protect our country.
It has been an action-packed first round of the African Nation Championship in the group stages, where matches have been spread across Kenya, Uganda and Tanzania, where contenders and pretenders to the title have already been separated. And as the tournament enters the business phase, the Confederation of African Football says it's deeply concerned by reports of crowd trouble, particularly in Kenya, which is set to host the finals of the competition at the end of August. Sadiq Shaban, CGTN, in Nairobi, Kenya.
Ethiopia's agriculture is characterized by diverse systems with the dominant ones being mixed farming in the highlands and pastoralism in the lowlands. Now, the mixed farming system integrates crop and livestock production with a wide variety of crops grown and animals raised for both consumption and sale. Small-scale farmers play a crucial role, producing a large percentage of the country's food crops.
Ethiopia is a major global producer of coffee and a significant exporter of agricultural products. The country's diverse agroecological zones support a wide range of crops, including coffee, cereals like teff and wheat, pulses, oilseeds, and vegetables. The vast majority of agricultural production in Ethiopia is carried out by small-scale farmers using traditional farming methods and rain-fed agriculture. Here in Garadabusa village, Hitosa district in Oromia region, a number of farmers have embraced agroecology. One of these is Denya Garma, who is practicing mixed farming.
He started at home. Then, when he observed that it works well, he expanded into this. He planted coffee, banana, avocado, mango, and so on.
For him to start, he was inspired by a retired teacher in the area where they visited under the farmers' learning groups, and he liked what he saw, as the group leader, Behailu Nigusi, explains.
Who has about 640 meter square house, building, plus chicken, plus nursery, plus burgers, plus a lot of varieties. And then discuss that we have to adopt that kind of approach to their farms. That is how they started.
He adds that this was poor soil, which has now improved to becoming one of the best.
This was a third grade soil. The farm is very poor. It was poor by adding manure, compost, and so on. Now it is upgraded into the first level.
At his home, Behailu is practicing what he preaches, using agroecological practices to grow different crops and also harvesting water. Livestock rearing is also important, with a significant number of nomadic or semi-nomadic herders relying on livestock for their livelihoods. With weather vagaries due to climate change, livestock farmers here stock hay in a unique format to help them feed their animals during the dry season.
Because this is animal feed from, this is from teff straw, this is from wheat, and then after threshing, this is a reserve as animal feed.
Pelham Ethiopia is pushing new farming methods such as agroecology to increase yields while reducing environmental impacts. Pelham's country coordinator in Ethiopia, Dr. Helu Araya, notes that farmers have been organized into learning groups which are helping them share knowledge and best practices.
Our 90% of our seed supply is a local seed system. It's only less than 10% the improved seed supply system.
One of the challenges Dr. Hailu notes is the gap between scientists and farmers and lack of appropriate and affordable technologies for the farmers.
So we have to work with the farmers to ensure that production is sustained for us to be able to ensure that the demand for these goods is readily available.
And the big problem is the recognition of agroecology as an adaptation mechanism is still struggling. As AFSA, we believe that, you know, agroecology is the best method for adaptation and the best way of life for adaptation.
With proper policies, stakeholders believe that this approach will spread across Africa and ensure not only increased food production, but also conservation of the environment. I'm Benjamin Jumbe, NTV Weekend Edition.
The 45th SADC Summit has concluded in Antananarivo, with Madagascar hosting and assuming the bloc's rotating presidency for the first time. Leaders are focused on regional trade, industrialization, agriculture, and energy, while political and security issues across the region were also discussed. Let's take a listen.
a risk consultant to help us unpack the summit's outcomes and what they mean for SADC's future. Marissa, thank you for making time for us on this Monday. How are you?
A very good morning to you, Asanda. I'm doing great, thanks. How are you?
I'm good, thank you so much. So Madagascar has now assumed the SADC rotating presidency. How significant is this for the country's influence and leadership within the bloc?
Well, it's actually fascinating to see the current president of Madagascar, and I'm going to butcher his name. It's Andry Rajoelina. It's actually fascinating to see him chairing the summit because in 2009, he led a coup in Madagascar, which was the start of a couple of years long political crisis in the country. And this move actually got Madagascar suspended from SADC for a period of 5 years, and then it got readmitted in 2014. So it's quite funny to see how much has actually changed. But it obviously bodes well for, I think, Madagascar's prominence and standing within the regional body.
The summit addressed peace and security issues, including the situation in the DRC. Do you think SADC member states are effectively presenting a united political front?
I think they present a united political front in the sense, you know, that there is repeated talk of the need, you know, to resolve the ongoing security crisis in the DRC. But I think that when it does come to security matters as a whole, I think SADC is just generally very ineffective. I mean, I've just spoken about how, yes, Madagascar did get suspended for the political crisis in 2009. But if we look at what's happened in Mozambique ever since the October general elections and the ongoing security issues in the country related to political repression, we don't really see SADC taking a stand on that. And it seems to be something that it continues to sweep under the carpet. It also does nothing to address, you know, for example, when there was a military coup in Zimbabwe, it didn't really take the same stance. So I think when it comes to security issues, SADC, it can present a unified front on certain issues, but it doesn't really take action to resolve them. It never really wants to trample on countries in general, trample on other countries' sovereignty. But as a result, it means that it's not very effective at resolving these kind of security crises or political crises in the region.
And on that point, then, how realistic is it that the summit's commitments will translate into tangible political outcomes?
Yeah, I'm always very, very skeptical of this. And I mean, I can be quite harsh on SADC in general. I mean, it has made some progress in sort of setting, you know, each country has to set up a kind of regional representation office, but many countries are behind on this. And if I look at what was discussed at the summit, you know, they're talking about greater regional integration and greater economic integration. And I suspect that the reason why this theme has been so prominent is obviously because of global events triggered by US President Donald Trump, you know, where he's withdrawing a lot of foreign support for countries. And obviously countries like Madagascar especially are very reliant on this. Madagascar is classified as one of the poorest countries in the world, very reliant on foreign aid. But, you know, these types of talks have been going on for decades. You know, they talk about the potential of the region's agricultural sectors. They talk about, you know, there's a lot of potential with renewable energy. But no real fundamental progress has been made in decades to actually, obviously except for South Africa, but to have these agricultural sectors perform better, to develop agro-processing sectors. And, you know, Madagascar also has a very big challenge from climate change. It's very affected, much like Mozambique and Zimbabwe, by extreme weather events, especially flooding. It normally takes place between December and April. And it hasn't really gone a way to sort of tackling these issues on its own. And I'm not really sure by, you know, announcing these commitments at a summit is going to go any sort of way to fixing this. You know, the work needs to be done internally, and then there needs to be greater cooperation, but there needs to be tangible efforts rather than having summits and grand gestures.
On the topic of economics, SADC aims to increase manufacturing from 11% to 30% of GDP by 2030. Do you see these targets as achievable given the current infrastructure and policy environment?
Yeah, not achievable at all. I mean, 2030 is, it's not even 5 years away, it's 4 years away. We're nearly at the end of this year. Yeah. I mean, South Africa is the only really industrialized economy within SADC. You know, you've got, you know, like you pointed out, infrastructure. We need way more development within SADC states to actually take place in order for that to be feasible. That would be a huge jump. And then again, yes, you need to have a supportive policy environment. And I don't really see that taking place in other countries, mostly because there are concerns over their politics, which naturally drives away investors. They also don't have the kind of energy needs that would support manufacturing. You've also got to tackle things like education, because you don't want to import labor for things like manufacturing if the goal is to drive economic growth in the country and to support the country's own development. But that is going to be what has to happen. And, you know, again, I wish SADC wouldn't sort of speak about these unrealistic targets, or, I mean, any government in the world, really. It sounds nice on paper to say that you're going to get there by 2030. But we need to have smaller goals. You know, it would be fine to say you want to increase it by 2% by 2030. That would already make a big difference in the lives of thousands of people. But instead, you know, they go for these bigger grand things to make it sound like there's more being done. But it's just absolutely not realistic. And I mean, Madagascar as well is not, I think, very well integrated with SADC. It's much more integrated, especially countries in the Middle East, like the UAE. It's got greater links to countries like India and China. So for it to sort of start focusing on SADC regional integration would also be kind of a step away from how things have been done traditionally, which, again, also takes time and takes a lot of work.
Journalists are being urged to enhance investigative reporting.
It is a gathering of journalists from various media organizations across the nation, receiving extensive training on how to improve their reportage on public finance management and accountability. The training provides participants with essential tools for financial tracking and technical physical data to enhance their stories for greater accountability.
The needs of the people do not form the core, the allocation, the allocative pattern of the budget. So how do we make the budgetary allocation to be participatory, inclusive, to be people-centered? And to drive this is also to get the media to partner with us, help in terms of building, you know, creating that awareness, influencing government in terms of the need for participatory approach.
I want to see that corruption is being reduced, as we saw in the presentation around the IFF, the illicit financial flows, so that the media can also have that capacity to be able to, you know, investigate and do all of this.
Key takeaways from the workshop include gender-responsive public service, revenue mobilization and allocation, budget processing, and ethics and legal considerations in investigative journalism.
Able to learn a lot of things about public finance management, as well as gender-responsive public services, how different gender have different needs and also strategies, how we can do reports on those priorities based on their needs.
This training has reminded us as journalists on what to do, holding government responsible to their duties, reporting gender public service, how best we can, you know, hold the government responsible.
Participants commit to applying the knowledge gained from the training to their reporting.
This training by ActionAid is expected to equip the journalists with necessary skills in public finance reporting, a key to stronger Nigeria. In Lagos, Sunny Adamu, Arise News.
Google agrees a $36 million penalty over Australian competition charge.
Google has agreed to pay a fine over what Australia says were anti-competitive deals on search. The settlement Monday focused on its agreements with telecoms operators Telstra and Optus, a unit of Singapore Telecommunications. Australian competition watchdogs say the tech giant reached understandings with the pair that they would only install its search engine on phones they sold. It says the telecom companies got a share of Google's ad revenues in return. Regulators say the Alphabet unit has cooperated with the probe, admitted liability, and agreed to pay a penalty of close to $36 million. It has reportedly agreed to remove some search engine installations and will lift restrictions on the default search option set in contracts with Android phone makers and networks. Australian officials said the deal would offer greater choice over search for consumers in the country. Google said it was pleased to resolve the concerns and was committed to offering phone makers more flexibility.
Zelensky is in Washington to discuss acceptable terms for a peace deal.
Ukraine's president will be accompanied by European leaders as he heads to Washington for talks with Donald Trump. Volodymyr Zelensky will first meet with the U.S. president before he's joined by the likes of Emmanuel Macron, Giorgia Meloni, and Ursula von der Leyen. The talks come days after Donald Trump's high-stakes summit with Vladimir Putin in Alaska yielded a few results. In the run-up to today's meeting, Trump posted on Truth Social, putting the onus of ending the war squarely with Ukraine's President Volodymyr Zelensky, writing he can end the war with Russia almost immediately. Now for more on The View from Kyiv, here's Emmanuel Shaz reporting.
It's been quite a roller coaster of emotions here in Ukraine because as the diplomatic events unfolded since Friday, since the summit between Donald Trump and Vladimir Putin in Alaska, and then the announcement of that visit of Volodymyr Zelensky in the White House, Ukrainians have not stopped experiencing war. There were still red alerts. There were still attacks all over the country while the future of the country was being discussed abroad. And there's a worry now ahead of this White House meeting, first off, that it's going to be a repeat of what happened in the Oval Office on the 28th of February, where Volodymyr Zelensky was in a sense, bullied by Donald Trump and J.D. Vance and pressured into accepting any deal whatsoever to stop the war. And that would have been a deal favoring Russia. So there's very much a worry that this is going to happen again, even if there is relief. First, because EU leaders are backing up Volodymyr Zelensky by coming to Washington as well to meet Donald Trump, and also because the U.S. has promised security guarantees for Ukraine this time around, with a little bit of a worry there as well, because in the past, Ukrainians had been promised security guarantees by its allies, and I'm thinking about the 1994 Budapest Memorandum that saw Ukraine giving up its nuclear arsenal in exchange for a promise of being protected should the country be attacked. We are decades after this agreement, and we've seen that since 2014, this hasn't prevented Russia from attacking Ukraine. So ahead of this meeting, Ukrainians are quite worried indeed.
Emmanuel Shaz reporting there. We can now go across to our Brussels correspondent, Dave Keating. Dave, it seems like European leaders are essentially hand-holding Zelensky to Washington. What are they afraid of?
Well, the purpose of this is to basically give him backing. As Emmanuel was just explaining, the fear is that you get another instance of the Oval Office ambush, as people called it at the time, where Zelensky was publicly berated by the U.S. president and vice president. So it's to show support for Zelensky, but more specifically, they want to make sure that if Trump presents any new demands following his summit with Vladimir Putin on Friday that cross Ukraine's red lines, that the European leaders will be there to back him up. So before that Alaska summit, the European leaders and Zelensky had a conference call with Trump last Wednesday, in which they laid out to him what would essentially not be acceptable to them. So they want to be there to repeat those red lines if Trump springs that on Zelensky today. The problem is, as you outlined there at the beginning, there is going to be a private meeting with President Trump and President Zelensky first before the European leaders are then allowed into the room. And as we understand it, there will even be a press pool with just Trump and Zelensky, maybe with others in the administration who are not so friendly to Zelensky. And so, of course, the fears of some kind of Oval Office ambush again are there. I think that the question here is one of credibility. Do the European leaders really have the stomach to go against Donald Trump if he really forces something on Vladimir Zelensky? If he says, if you don't accept a loss of territory, as he suggested in his Truth Social post overnight, the U.S. is going to pull all supports. Do the four European leaders who will be there, so President von der Leyen from the EU Commission, British Prime Minister Keir Starmer, Italian Prime Minister Giorgia Meloni, and French President Emmanuel Macron, will they have the stomach in that room to say no?
And this brings us to the conclusion of today's episode of On the Radar Analysis right here on Eagle FM. Now I do hand over the mic to my colleague Louisa Shimi as she brings you the Onko Nana Dingi program, that is our news bulletin in Oshiwambo. And of course, the Home Run Show with Dwight and Helmut from 16:30 will keep you company. And then from 1800 hours. I don't know why I always get that wrong. From 1800 hours, David Chombe will bring you the business economic segment. Otherwise, stay tuned for other broadcasts coming up right here on Eagle FM. From Indafa Happy Juju, it is goodbye. Also, be reminded to grab your copy of the Villager e-paper, out today and also again out on Wednesday and on Friday. Goodbye.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than the Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for free, directly to your phone or computer. To become a subscriber, simply send a WhatsApp message with your number and email address to
01-200-4144. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Eagle FM, the eye. Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud. So
not a fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura. And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before. It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Omudiha utekirwa kaguna I matina omjo. Chikao shafasa na nana nongeshifa ya ishiwike moshiwana. Iye moyawo ota ingongotisa mwene. Anangeshifa ya Namibia ombitombwa na wa olonjika. Seitha nina omayakuro nirandisomwa yue yongeshifa yoye kupitira mo Eagle FM Media House. Ngoe tuende tuimemeha uka kombanga nina. Kara omkwashi pareki uimepo yomo programa letu. Moambo dengira selma onarahe tatu imu. Datu ndatu heari hamano tano oniaji. Eagle FM, the eye.
No matter where you are, if you have a mobile device, you can tune into Namibia's number one talk radio station by downloading the Eagle FM app on the Google Play Store.